from NPR Music. You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Every year, at the end of the year, we've done our year-end wrap-ups. We put the lists online. We always bring Lars Gotrich in to play. Look, everybody on the NPR Music team brings something special to the table, something a little different. Lars brings things that are actually a lot different. So we save a whole show for Lars. We'll characterize it and tell me if I'm wrong, because I don't know exactly what you brought to the table. Metal and noise.
Metal, drone, ambient.
Why don't we start? Start me off with something, with maybe the kicks a little bit.
All right. Well, on the website, we'll have the full top 10.
So this is excerpts from your sorted top 10.
Yeah, this is a smattering of the top 10. We'll start off at the number 9, which is Ludicra. They're a San Francisco-based metal band. If you want to be easy, it's black metal. They kind of bring in the grit and grime of San Francisco in a very real and emotional kind of way. And it's just a release that I've been coming back to. The name of it is The Tenant, and the song is A Larger Silence.
Great. Let's listen to the Ludicra. Glad we got to that vocal part. We'll put the whole song on online, npr.org/allsongs. But there was a lot more going on vocally than I might normally hear, and certainly more than I expected when I first heard the vocals on there. Nice. I don't know if that was a woman or just harmonizer or harmonies or what
there
was going
are,
on.
The main vocalist is a female, the screamer, if
the
you will.
The very first voice was...
And the one of the guitarists is also a female, and she sings. And, they're a band that's been around since 1999. So they've been around a while. This is their fourth full-length. I've just always been... I caught them on a tour... They're opening up for this band called Hammers of Misfortune, who are also from San Francisco and share similar members. And I went for Hammers and Misfortune not knowing anything about Ludacris. And it's one of those things where even though Hammers and Misfortune did they had an amazing show, I came away like a new fan of Ludacris. I was just completely blown away by the raw emotion put behind this performance, but also the technicality and like real raw ability of their instruments. Like, I love the production on this album. It's, you hear everything.
Yeah.
It's, nothing's compressed, nothing's blown out. There are no like erroneous effects on like on a lot of metal albums. You hear what you hear because that's what they want you to hear.
Now that you've said that, can we just listen to like 20 more seconds and
yeah.
Clear?
Yeah.
Larger Silence is the name of the song. Ludacris is the band. The album is called
The Tenant.
Okay. And let's just do a little bit of a backstory here. Lars, you've been working on a, like all of us, on your list for the end of the year for a while now.
Yeah, I tend to start my list. Well, I technically start my list making at the beginning of each year. I keep a Google Doc running starting January 1st. And I just will list every album that I happen to like throughout the year, even if it's just a little bit. And throughout the course of the year, that list gets very long. Around the middle of November, I print out that Google Doc. And
so you go from digital to analog.
Go right digital to analog. I print it out, and I cut them into little strips of paper.
And little is about the, what would you call it?
It's they're not even a quarter of an inch. Yeah, maybe a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, little strips. I sit across from Lars, and
yeah.
I hear what you're playing, and I watch this paper shuffle.
and then I move them around like I would like a top 10, and it's my near OCD, you know, list making technique every year.
It's fascinating to watch. We've put up a time lapse of at least a chunk of this process online.
Yes.
A video time lapse. It's real fascinating to watch. It's the most interesting, visually the most interesting process of coming up with top 10 lists. And we'll put the entire top 10 list. Actually, we'll put more. We'll put the top, your top what? What do you want?
25.
To okay, let's do that. We'll put that on the All Songs Considered blog. And also, Lars, you can read Lars's writing, and we're going to try to have you write at least once a week. It's been occasional. We're right now here because we're telling people. You can look for more from Lars every Friday on the All Songs Considered blog. There it is.
Are you holding me to Fridays, Bob?
I just happen to say it.
All right.
Once a week.
Now I have a deadline.
Yeah, we'll call it Friday. Pick us something else on the list.
Up next, we'll skip to number 7. You have to forgive my French or what lack of it that I remember from high school.
Say anything, I got to censor when you say, watch my French. No, okay.
It's this Quebecois woman who records. Her name is Geneviève Castré, and she records under the name O Payon. The O has a circumflex above it, if you know what that is. And then I looked this up in Babelfish, and apparently Payon means peacock, so oh, peacock, maybe. It's a self-released album called Courses. And if you're familiar with Mount Eerie...
Yes, we've done Mount Eerie on our shows.
Right.
Very moody, very atmospheric.
Very atmospheric folk and of recent black metal-influenced musician. Geneviève is Phil Elverin's partner. Well, let's just listen to the track, and I won't attempt to pronounce the French.
Okay, yeah.
Des preuves fondaires. Sainte patronne de personne.
I didn't want to make this one stop. I really thought this was beautiful. This is not what I expected to hear, and I'm trying to figure out what it is that attracts you to this. Is it this? It's very simple.
Yeah, it's really unlike anything that's probably comes out of my, you know, top 25
list. So what's your attraction?
I'm attracted to its simplicity. I'm attracted to how she uses the loop not as a crutch, but as something to build upon a song. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when you repeat something enough, sometimes it becomes a mantra or a prayer, and it almost feels like a looped liturgy for the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there are English translations of her Quebecois in the liner notes.
Oh, good.
And
liner notes.
Uh-huh.
Could you explain to some of a generation what a liner note is?
Right. But they're all about alienation and pollution and violence and greed, and you know, it's almost as if she welcomes them with these songs in a very kind of detached manner. I think that's what I think mm-hmm. we're really attracted to.
Now, what is going on? Do you know? Is this real time playing, or and who's doing the guitar? What I assume is a guitar.
Well, from what I think, I don't know about that track in particular. I know she does a lot of the looping herself, like guitar looping and vocal looping herself. But on other tracks in the album, some of which are a little bit more fleshed out, The bassist from Godspeed You Black Emperor provides a lot of the arrangements, but they're very small. Yeah. There's nothing grandiose about this record. It's just small, petite, haunting, and terrifying.
Perfect. I'm here with Lars Gotrich. We're talking about his favorite music for the year. We're counting down his top 10. The music we just heard was by an artist, Opeon.
That's what we're going to guess for now.
Yeah, okay. And the record's called Courses. Take us somewhere else.
If I may, I'd like to do a deviation.
Okay.
Okay. Is that all right?
Yeah, fine.
So I also wrote a top 10 cassettes of the year.
Figured.
It's a very nerdy world to be involved in. I admit that because these, you know, a lot of underground musicians release these cassettes in, you know, like in editions of 50 or 75. And the people who really seek them out are the ones that get to hear them.
And is the attraction to cassette the fact that they're less easy to duplicate, or is it the sound? Where are we going?
I think it's the sound. Uh-huh. It's this return to analog that's not vinyl because it's cheap.
Yeah, although copying cassettes is a pain.
There are places where you can get them copied professionally.
Okay. Yeah,
and as a guy who runs a record label every now and again, it's actually not that expensive to do. And, you know, I've been collecting cassettes ever since I bought my grandmother's car because it came with a cassette player. And I didn't have money to buy a CD player at the time. So the cassette culture tends to invite artists more in the noise drone spectrum, as well as a lot of black metal artists. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what this list reflects. And I just wanted to play like a snippet of one of them.
So not necessarily on your top 10, but just an interesting
It is on the top 10.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. It's a Los Angeles musician who records under the name of Warm Climate.
Okay.
And it's like, it's kind of a bizarre Bowie free jazz. The song we're about to play is the most Bowie-esque. It's called Saltwater Simplified. It's off a cassette put out on Stunned Records called Camouflage on the River Wretched. And it's the most Bowie-esque of what he does, or a T-Rex-esque of what he does. But just give it a listen.
Great. So Warm Climate's artist name, and the song Saltwater Simplified from a cassette. If I wanted that cassette, how would I get it?
on this top 10 cassettes list, I'll give a list of a number of distros that specialize in this kind of music. And if you're lucky, maybe you'll find a copy.
Excellent. I like that.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. I've liked everything so far, like a lot. Even the Ludicra, which, you know me and some of the vocal stuff.
Right.
But it had a lot of rewards to it. So this is great.
All right, Bob. Maybe there's hope for you yet.
It leaks out of the headphones on a daily basis. It's got to have some impact. Where are we heading next?
I think next we should go to the Fun Years.
Okay. Who are they?
The Fun Years are Ben Recht and Isaac Sparks. I don't know if you're familiar with these. Do you know Tim Hecker at all?
I know that name, but I don't know why.
He's an ambient musician. Or Philip Jeck,
yes.
Also an
ambient. Philip Jeck does turntable stuff. Yeah.
Turntable stuff. So imagine, if you will, a perfect combination of the two.
Oh, cool.
And
okay.
That's kind of what you're getting with the Fun Years. And, normally something that's not necessarily derivative, but sounds very much like those artists wouldn't be top 10 fodder for me, because I've heard it a lot before, and it's always really nice to listen to, but something has to stand out, and something stands out with this album.
Okay.
The name of the album is...
I love the name of the album.
God was like, no.
God was like, no.
No. What they do is Isaac Sparks plays the turntables, more or less, and he runs records and everything through lots of processors and things like that, and his bandmate Ben is the guitarist. And it's not so much the songs that do it for me, it's the arc of the album.
Which is going to be hard for us to replicate here.
Right.
Let's play a little song and then we'll talk about the arc of this record. And what song are we going to hear?
This is the opening track, Breach on the Bowstring.
I'm honestly having trouble imagining which is the turntable.
Maybe it's not as prevalent or as high in the mix.
Can I just pick something else?
Sure, sure.
Yeah. I'm actually just going to randomly pick a track. How's that?
All right.
This one's called Little Vapors. I like the name. I obviously hear the scratching.
Yeah.
You hear
the crackle of the vinyl.
Not played at the regular speed, I assume, right? I mean, that can't be.
And what's even better is actually getting this record on vinyl, so you have the extra crackles,
right,
Exactly.
This is like the fifth track on the record. I'm going to go to like the...
You should really go to the last track.
Okay.
Track.
All right. Precious Persecution Complex. I like their name.
Now, this is what I was talking about earlier, the arc of the album. It starts out, you hear, it's very defined what you're hearing. You remember just the guitar,
yeah.
It's very pretty and ambient, and there is like a very loose melody happening, a loose chord progression happening. By the end of the album, we've reached the noise gate. basically. And you just hear that progression throughout the entire album. It's really one long track. Mm-hmm. And the...
These fun years don't actually sound very fun. I I like the record.
And I'm just... sitting with it and just absorbing the whole thing and then stepping back from what they've essentially created is just, it just kind of blows me away every time I listen to it. It's especially good on rainy mornings walking to work, you know.
Excellent. Just a little bit more. The fun years
with God was like
no. Excellent title. I'm here with Lars Gotrich. We're talking about some of his favorite noise and drone and metal records. And as we're sitting here, I'm sitting in front of my computer and seeing the notices that Captain Beefheart has passed away. Captain Beefheart is an artist that in the 1960s made records that really shook things up because he was doing things that were out there, but he was doing things that were out there on a label like Warner Reprise that was, you know,
right,
very much in the public eye, like Frank Zappa. In fact, he and Zappa have a good long history together.
Yeah.
Back in 68, 69, 70. Trout Mask Replica was one of the records.
It was definitely the one that he's known for, mainly because you hear him, he smashes glass inside of a piano or something like that. And
he inspired people to do and try a lot of crazy good music. But
he also wrote, that record kind of overshadows like how much of a pop musician he was too. Like Safe as Milk, they're just delightfully weird pop songs.
Yeah.
And they're basically songs that the Beatles didn't want to write.
I'm going to just quickly sort my record collection, my computer with what I have ripped, because I don't have any vinyl here. And how about if I just play a little Captain Beefheart for people who've never heard him? And let's listen to a song I actually really love, that not a well-known one of Captain Beefheart's. It's called Tropical Hot Dog Night.
Goodbye, Don.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Boy. It's, you know, with the only good thing about musicians that pass, great musicians that pass, is that now a whole lot of people hear his music that maybe only heard their name.
Yeah.
You know, if that song came out today by somebody, I would love it just as much as when it came out in...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right, we'll continue on.
Yeah. It's the same journey. I'm talking here with Lars Gotrich, and Lars works at NPR Music. He produces many of the web pages that you see when you come here. He's a frequent guest and maybe needs to be a more frequent guest on our show. He writes for the All Songs Considered blog. You write for the jazz blog, Blog Supreme. And we're picking music from Lars's top 10. And we're randomly kind of going up the chart here, and we'll put the whole list up.
Put the whole list up, yeah.
What do you got?
All right. Number three, I know this is a shared record between the two of us. It might be the only one. but another sad, bittersweet farewell, Jack Rose. Jack Rose was a fingerstyle guitarist who passed away a little over a year ago. And his one of his last recorded outputs was this record called Luck in the Valley, which came out at the beginning of the year. And it's hard for this not to be a sentimental favorite instead of an objective one. I only got to see him perform once. I never met him, but I missed the hell out of him. Huh. You know, it's like I look forward to everything that he put out.
This is acoustic guitar playing,
right?
6 and sometimes 12 strings
and slide guitar as well. Uh-huh. He's done full slide guitar records, and I get emotional just thinking about it because his music has meant so much to me. He was the forefront of the American primitive revival, and he picked
describe
up
what that means to people.
Yeah,
don't
sure.
Know what that is.
If you know the name John Fahey, what John Fahey did, he's kind of brought otherworldly types of music to the blues guitar. I think that's the best way to say it. Like Indian classical music and things like that. So,
not in a way of copying it, but in a way of bringing their sort of spirit. That's so you get the ringing,
right,
drony strings, but you're not hearing necessarily Indian ragas.
Right. And what happened was Jack Rose, he was a member of this drone rock band called Pelt, and he heard a John Fahey record, and that just changed everything. And he just decided to learn how to play this way. Certainly, a lot of guitars came out of that revival that's happened in the last, what would you say, is that the last 6 or 7 years?
That sounds about right.
But Jack Rose was always the top for me. You know, he wasn't like a John Fahey copycat. What he did was is even rawer. You could feel his red face, bearing into the guitar as he played. And but then there are moments on this record where he just kind of kicks back his shoes and downs a few cups of whiskey and just has a good old time. And so that's why I love playing Lick Mountain Ramble from this record. It's like he does these gorgeous solo guitar pieces, which I could listen to all day. But to be honest, I just start smiling when I listen to this song. Miss you, Jack.
Yeah, and the sessions are very much, well, everything's live on this record. There's not an overdub to be
right,
had.
Recorded live in the studio and recorded with the Black Twig Pickers.
That's why I was wondering who else was playing on this. And was this record, he died like right around this time, about the top of December of last year. Was the record done when he
The
passed?
Record was done, it was going to be a big deal because the record was going to be released on Thrill Jockey. So he would have gotten even more exposure than he would than he did in the past.
A label that would have been a lot bigger of anything that he would have done before.
Right. Because he mostly worked with small one-off labels and, you know, did limited pressings and things like that. So,
and he wasn't 40, right? I mean,
I think he was 38. Yeah.
Heart attack, was it?
I think, yeah, it was a heart. From what I understand, it was a heart attack.
Well, we've two things. One is we've had a couple of bits of depressing news and then sad Jack Rose but good music in both accounts. But I'm thinking that maybe some people out there thought, oh, great, Lars is on, here's some metal. So I'm just wondering what happened after the first cut. what happened to our Lars? You were it. You're our champion. Now you've gone acoustic on us.
Well, we're skipping around.
Lars unplugged.
Yeah. We're skipping around a little bit.
Okay.
So, like, we missed a record by Deathspell Omega, which is a, well, largely French-based black metal band, but not quite. They're extremely heady music.
And we'll put that on site.
We'll put that on site. And we also skipped the Body. And they're the most surreal doom metal album I've ever heard in my life. It's called All the Waters of the Earth Turn to Blood. Yeah.
Lars said, yeah, because my eyes just went in the back of my head, and they rolled.
Which
can you just play just a little of that for me?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't describe something like that and then I not hear it, so.
Together?
Yeah. So you we're not missing. You know, it's actually.
Levitation is involved here. That person just levitated. I'm convinced.
Basically, yeah. I mean, it's a duo, and the opening track is actually not a metal song at all. It's a 33-person choir.
Wow. Thank you.
Like I said, it's one of the most surreal metal albums I've heard in a long time.
The group name is?
The Body.
The Body. Okay. Awesome. The whole thing we'll put online. Let's go back on. That was the number what? Was that three?
That's number four.
Four. Okay.
So we went back a step
quick. That's okay. I like that. I'm glad we did that.
So up next is number two. I always have a hard time saying what my favorite band is. If you had to absolutely know what my favorite band is, it's Harvey Milk. And I've talked about this band, yeah. I feel like...
Each time you come on.
Every time I come on the show. Their new record is called A Small Turn of Human Kindness. If you're not aware, Harvey Milk is an Athens, Georgia-based sludge noise metal band. And they're a lot of things. They started up in the early 90s. They're more of a noise rock band.
A controversial name, for sure.
Oh, sure. Harvey Milk was the openly gay politician in San Francisco who was assassinated.
With the mayor.
With the mayor.
Mascone, yeah.
Yeah. They stopped playing after a while and then came back around, I think it was 2005. Yes, 2005. They came back and started playing shows and started recording albums again. And they're even better. I certainly have my personal favorites when it comes to Harvey Milk albums, but I think this is the best representation of the band.
Huh. And why?
Because it's one long, depressing joke. I mean, that's always been a part of them. There's always been this weird sick sense of humor about what they do, but it's very serious what they do.
Can I read off the titles?
Yeah.
So from the first one, just had an asterisk. I don't know if that's correct.
But yeah.
Okay. I just want to go home. I know this is no place for you. I'm sick of all this, too. I know this is my fault. I did not call out. I alone got up and left. Those are the titles of the record.
Yeah. I mean, and it reads like, poetry you might see on a bathroom stall or something like that.
Let's listen to some. Come back and talk about Harvey Milk from A Small Turn of Human Kindness. Which of those titles are we playing?
It's really hard to pick one because it's like one long, depressing joke, as I said.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with the closer. I did not call out.
Slowly she goes.
Well, tell me something, because we're just hearing one little sliver of one little 7 minute and 40 second song.
Right.
What's this going to do? Is it going to...
It erupts into like this glorious Southern rock anthem.
Oh, I'm going to find the eruption. Hang on. I'm 4 minutes in.
There we go.
There it is.
That's
I heard
it.
That. I heard the note. And
yeah, I love that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how the album ends. It's a story. Creston Spears, the vocalist guitarist, he hasn't been forthcoming on what the story's actually about.
Can you figure?
But I figure it's about a man on his last leg, and he just has no idea what to do with himself. And the last lines of the record suggest revival, but I don't know that I can trust it, mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Harvey Milk, A Small Turn of Human Kindness is the record.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, I watched as you shuffled your little pieces of paper around every day. As I maybe walked out the office or went to lunch, I'd sort of look over, see what was sitting at number one. I think you, this year more than any other year, tell me if I'm wrong, your number one seemed pretty solid.
It stayed there the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of all the things we're going to play on the show, I've only listened to two of them. Jack Rose, obviously, because we put him on all songs, and I really loved it. Thank you. And the other one is your number one record, which we had as a first listen.
Agalloch. The name of the record is Marrow of the Spirit.
Tell us about Agalloch.
Oh, gosh. Agalloch is they're a band that has a cult following. They're a band that only releases an album every 5 years. They've been around since the mid-90s, and they first started out... doing a mixture of black metal and folk music and kind of mixing the two together. And it was very wintry, very atmospheric. It was like fire coming out of the fog, which is how you could describe this record, too. And
yeah, but there was a lot of fire too.
Yeah, oh, definitely. A lot of people were really waiting for this record, including myself. And when I finally heard it, I don't do this often with record labels or publicity people, but I wrote an email back to the guy, the head guy at Profound Lord Records, and I said, I know this is going to sound really cheesy, but this is really something special. And, you know, metal albums like that don't come along that often for me. I mean, I'm big metalhead and everything, but like ones that really kind of shake me to my core, it's few and far in between, mm-hmm. you know? And
this wasn't just a drums, guitar, and raw vocal record.
Right. The album opens with a field recordings of a stream and a cello, and ends with those, by the way. Yeah. It's a cycle, more or less. And there's a really nice heavy Moog moment on the 17-minute track called Ghosts of the... Oh, my gosh. The problem with this CD is that it's embossed, so I'm having a hard time remembering the name and actually seeing the name of it. The 17-minute song, Black Lake Nidstong.
Yeah, N-I-D-S-T-A, and there's some...
There's an umlaut over. There's an umlaut over the A, and the D looks funky. I'm not quite sure what that symbol is, but it's a record about healing. Reportedly, the main vocalist, he was very sick, and he spent some time in these ancient ruins, lying in this like, basically what sounded like a stone grave. And he said it was a very healing process for him. So that experience very much influenced this record, and that theme kind of ties throughout the whole thing, and there are stories in each song, and I just get really excited talking about this album. It's going to seem silly, but one of my most favorite musical moments I've recently experienced, at 5 minutes and 33 seconds on the song Into the Painted Gray, I lift off. Yeah.
And that would be about, right about, let's just start to sneak it in. And we'll see if Lars could levitate here for us. Do you want to go out on this?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks for doing this, Lars.
Yeah, man.
Lars Gottfridge, he works and writes and hustles for NPR Music. That's not quite right. Hustles is kind of a funny way to put it.
Yeah, that's weird.
But right, well, you put that, you can add that to your list of things that you do here. And particularly drone noise, heavy and metal music. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Yep. For NPR Music, this is Agalloch, Lars' number one record. It's All Songs Considered.